Welcome back, episode 20, Gridiron Pulse. How we doing, Carter?
Pretty good, man. Can't complain. Definitely got a loaded show today, so ready to dive into it.
Yeah, we got so many topics to talk about. I mean, even as early as this morning, a bunch of news hit the Twitter sphere. Just a little preview. We got Jair Alexander news, Nick Chubb, Aaron Rodgers to the Steelers. We got Georgia with 8 new transfer portal additions in the baseball world. Tennessee gets hammered by Arkansas. And the Braves are just the worst team in the history of baseball, among many other things, including a NBA Finals Game 2 recap and then Game 1, because we haven't talked about that one yet since it was on the day that we last recorded. So let's get right into it. I know this news is very fresh. Just hit the fan this morning at about 8 o'clock. I woke up and saw that Jair Alexander just got released by the Green Bay Packers. It's a top 10 corner in the league, at least. I mean, just getting released is wild. It's like, bro just woke up and he's like, oh, I just got cut. I no longer have a job. And I mean, that would be, what, 7 o'clock in the morning, Green Bay, Wisconsin time? My take on this is I'm sure he's not devastated. I mean, he's obviously going to find a landing spot, and he's also going to probably find a pretty lucrative new contract as well. But yeah, I mean, that's the reason why he got released. The GM and the ownership of the Packers did not want to deal with someone like him, and they didn't want to pay someone like him again after some events that have happened throughout his career.
Yeah, that's pretty much my take. I think he got pretty much released just off of he wanting more money, and his performance the past few seasons hasn't lined up with what he wants, so I'm sure some NFL team's going to pay him what he wants. I guess just a few landing spots I had in mind. Ravens, definitely, I think, are... I would say probably the more potential landing spot, because they need help desperately at their corner position to help out Kyle Hamilton, and to pair up with Nate Wiggins, who I think who had a pretty solid year last year.
Yeah.
I've seen Commanders. They need help on in their secondary too. Yeah. So yeah, they need help too. Bengals, but I mean, we know the Bengals aren't going to pay him for what he wants just because they're a notoriously cheap organization and they're having to deal with the Trey Hendrickson situation. So
yeah,
I don't know. I'm sure he's going to have a lot of suitors that are going to pay him for what he wants. I guess we can go ahead and cross the Falcons off of that list because, one, they don't have any money. Two, they're not going to want to put up with, you know, his, I guess you could say, diva-ness that's in the locker room. So
antics.
Falcons are not going to go after him. But if I were a betting man, I definitely would say the Ravens are going to sign him.
Yeah, that's definitely a good list.
By the way, nice matching shirt, man.
Oh, nice. Thank you. It's definitely a nice list of teams for sure. I know the one that I saw that you hadn't mentioned was the Bills tried to trade for him this offseason, although that was probably before they signed Maxwell Harrison to a first-round contract. So that's probably off the books, but I mean, everyone needs help in the secondary. It's definitely a position that you would rather be deep in than weak in, for sure. I know I sent you a video this morning from Pat McAfee's show about a year ago, whenever. These are just like a few examples of some of the antics that we're talking about when it comes to Jair Alexander. So he was not elected team captain for one of the final games of the year, and he elected himself to be team captain. Just walked out and was the speaking captain. Not only that, he was about this close to botching up the the call. They said he didn't say he wanted to defer to the second half. He said he was like, we want to go on defense. And the ref literally had to like step in and help him out. Then he got suspended for one game after that. So, I mean, the Packers are clearly a no-nonsense organization when it comes to stuff like that. I mean, I just thought it was so random. I know he has a year left on his current deal. So, I mean, he was obviously going to be on the team and playing quite a bit this year. But he's obviously obviously looking for a new deal. I don't think he's obviously not that same high-end CB1 that he was. I mean, he was a top three corner in the league for like the past 3 or 4 years, I guess. But now he's probably towards the high-end CB2 conversation. I mean, he's definitely, he's not like your typical archetype for a CB1 for sure. I mean, he's built more like a slot guy. He's definitely shorter, very fast, quick on his feet. I mean, really good in coverage. But yeah, it's just a weird and interesting scenario. That was not on my Monday morning bucket list. We'll just say that.
Yeah, definitely. You know, when I saw the news on Twitter, I was definitely surprised. But you know, if you, like I said, I'm just gonna assume that he's wanting too much money that the Packers are not gonna give him again, just strictly just based off of performance.
Yeah.
You know, the past few years, so. One side of me is surprised, the other side of me is not. I mean, NFL is a business. If you're wanting more money and your performance doesn't back it up, then you're not going to get paid what you want. Which,
yeah.
You know, a ton of people or a ton of guys in the NFL, this situation happens to them all the time where they're wanting more money and their performance doesn't back it up. So
yeah,
I'm just going to assume that's it, and then. You know, just the off the field stuff that you talked about with you know, basically picking himself as the team captain and almost losing a game for Green Bay. So
he was like, my boys got me.
I'm sure ownership was probably just sick of it, just didn't want him in the locker room anymore. So like I said, I think he's gonna have plenty of suitors, so
yeah.
We'll see what happens.
Yeah, I just checked his age. I mean, I thought he might be a little bit older than this because it does seem like he's been in the NFL for, like, forever. But he's only 28. So he's got some good years left ahead of him for sure. Just obviously wants to get paid like a CB1, but has kind of regressed away from being that true CB1. Just all in all, super weird situation. But something I did have on my Monday morning bucket list, but we don't have confirmation from this yet. Nick Chubb will be signing with the Houston Texans pending a physical, which is probably going on right now as we speak. And I'm sure we'll see a bunch of news after, as soon as we're done recording the podcast, that Nick Chubb has signed with the Texans. That's just how it seems to happen, I guess. But him pairing up with Joe Mixon in that backfield could be a pretty nice 1-2 punch for sure. I mean, I know we're higher on Nick Chubb than probably just about anyone. I mean, he's one of the best players I've ever gotten the privilege to go see in person. Damn good dog. He is an alum. Damn good dog. Yeah, I think him and Joe Mixon are going to be pretty lethal with paired along with CJ Stroud in that backfield.
Yeah, should be interesting. Definitely going to be one of the, I guess, the funner 1-2 backfields in the NFL. I'm just going to go ahead and assume that he's going to sign. He's been rehabbing from his last injury for damn near probably over a year. So, unless something just crazy happens, I fully expect them to be a Houston Texan, which I think should be a fun team to watch. You know. I think, you know, with the Texans having probably one of the worst offensive lines in the NFL last year, and I think they definitely focused on that in the draft, which I fully expected them to do, should be interesting. You know, I think, you know, having a good 1-2 punch definitely takes the pressure off of Stroud, who I think had a really big sophomore slump last year, but that could also just been due to the point where he was the, I'm pretty sure he was the second most sacked quarterback last year behind Caleb Williams. So, I think should be a fun 1-2 backfield. I think Nick Chubb could definitely be a dude that they bring in on, third and one, third and two, trying to get a first or trying to punch the ball in on the goal line. But I mean, let's be real. I don't think he's gonna take Joe Mixon's starting spot unless somehow he just gets injured or if he just has a really terrible camp. I fully expect him to be the RB2, which I'm happy with. I still think he can play in the league. It's just injuries are just have been derailing his career, which is so sad to watch. But I'm glad he's getting another opportunity with another team in the NFL. So definitely will be watching more Texans games this year.
Yeah, me too. I was very high on the Texans last season, especially in fantasy
Everyone was.
football terms, and just got screwed over by CJ Stroud and Nico Collins and Tank Dell all getting hurt. There was a point in time where I had all three of them on my team, and they were like three of my first 6 or 7 round draft picks, and the team was out of commission for at least like 4 weeks until Nico Collins came back. But yeah, I like the makeup of their roster. Like you said, they revamped that offensive line even after trading away Laremy Tunsil, which I thought was very
Just made no
strange.
sense.
Yeah, made no sense whatsoever. So they traded away Laremy Tunsil, but then spent the vast majority of the entire draft working on offensive linemen, as well as they traded for a couple more. I think they got a couple guards as well through either free agency or trading. But it's definitely going to be a new look offensive line, new look receiver core. Besides, I mean, Tank Dell, we don't even know if he's going to be healthy or not. I mean, it's super
Such an
sad because it was
awful
a
injury.
horrific injury. I mean, especially for someone that's like 5'9", 160 pounds. It's like definitely not the side that you want to be in, but they address wide receiver in the draft as well. I believe did they get Jaden Higgins? Something. They got one of those two Iowa State wide receivers.
They got somebody. I can't remember who
I
it
think it's
was.
Higgins, but they got one of those two really good Iowa State wide receivers who's probably looking to take that wide receiver two role behind Nico Collins, who's honestly one of the more exciting players within himself. And I mean, he was awesome for the past 2 years whenever he's been healthy. That's the thing, is keeping him on the field. Anything else on the Texans here?
No. Hopefully, I would imagine Nick Chubb should make the 53 man because I mean it's Nick Chubb, but we'll see. Again, I'm excited he's getting another opportunity. I'm also glad that he's away from that hellhole that is the Cleveland Browns.
Yeah.
So hopefully things turn around for
Yeah.
him in the right direction.
He gets to play in one of the easiest divisions in the NFL too. The AFC South is just usually completely dog water. Just really, really bad. I mean, I'm sure he's gonna love getting to play the Colts, Titans, and Jags twice a year. I mean, I would. I like to target players in the AFC South just because of their easy schedule. Like, that's why I thought CJ Stroud was gonna be a world beater last year, but that didn't happen, unfortunately. But now we got Aaron Rodgers puts pen to paper, makes it official, signing
About
with
damn time.
Cole Aycox, Gridiron Pulse's own Cole Aycox, Steelers. Oh man, I love seeing those graphics every time. It's like this one's a little bit different because there was a different connotation behind it, but I know you know the graphics where it's like, I can't even say it. Pittsburgh Steelers odds to win the Super Bowl before signing Aaron Rodgers,
And
and then
after?
after Aaron Rodgers is the exact same. I think it's the exact same because just about everybody knew that he was going to the Steelers because they literally didn't have a quarterback. And both parties have said like they're open to waiting for Rodgers, and Rodgers was like, yeah, I got some stuff going on, whatever. So I think those odds were already accounting for Rodgers coming in there. But then you think back and it's like, why'd you trade away George Pickens, dude? They had the best wide receiver core in the NFL, at least top three at the very worst, behind maybe the Bengals. And you just trade away George Pickens for a bag of chips and a couple pennies. But I know he was one of those guys who wanted a new deal, but had a chance to have a career year with actually having a quarterback for the first time in his career. But that's kind of beside the point. I've seen a couple reports about the Steelers looking at some potential veteran wide receivers who are also in contract disputes, namely Terry McLaurin. Hasn't been at minicamp or anything like that. I don't think he plans on showing up. So that would be interesting. I mean, I think he would be a great pairing for someone like DK Metcalf, just a couple of different types of receivers. That's the only thing I can think of about the Pickens thing is maybe they thought Pickens was too similar to DK Metcalf. But why would you not want to have two wide receiver ones? I don't get it. But Terry McLaurin would be a great pairing for them if they're able to pull it off. If not, I'm sure they will go out and get Alan Lazard, just another wide receiver one. There's nothing you can say about that.
Randall Cobb's going to come out of retirement.
Bringing Cobb back. Steelers. Let's get the gang back together. Call up Jordy Nelson.
Davante Adams is going to void his contract and go to Pittsburgh. Jacob, this news literally broke like as we finished our show last Thursday, and we were very pissed off.
Yeah.
So I'm glad that we're talking about it now. But Aaron Rodgers, he signed a 1-year, $13.6 million contract that includes $10 million guaranteed and can be worth up to $19.5 million. I want to say this is an overpay, but the Steelers needed a quarterback badly, so I really don't care if they quote unquote overpaid for Aaron Rodgers is 40 now, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, over like a 40-year-old quarterback. I mean, I'm sure if the Falcons were to trade Kirk Cousins away, they probably would have overpaid for him too. Because I mean, let's be real, they weren't gonna roll with Mason Rudolph as their starting quarterback for this season. They were getting either Aaron Rodgers or Kirk Cousins, one of the two. So, I can't really hate this move for the Steelers. They needed a quarterback. The George Pickens trade looks dumber by the day, especially after Aaron Rodgers signed with them. I thought, you know, if the Steelers kept him, I thought he was going to have a big year along with DK Metcalf. And I would say Pat Freiermuth too, because I think Aaron Rodgers definitely likes to throw to his tight ends a lot. I don't understand the reasoning for the George Pickens trade. Now with an actual competent quarterback, not Kenny Small Gloves. So I don't know. I think the Steelers are just gonna be, you know, the usual mid that they are every year, somehow still sneak in the playoffs and get annihilated in the wild card. Just going off what you said about, you know, the Steelers looking at some vet receivers, if the Commanders seriously let Terry McLaurin walk and Jaden Daniels number one is a washed up Deebo Samuel, they would be doing that man so dirty.
Yeah.
It's not even unbelievable. It'd be unbelievable. But
yeah,
in my opinion, I think the Commanders are going to work out a deal with him. I don't see him, you know, wanting to request a trade or, you know, I mean, hell, getting the Jaire Alexander treatment and getting released for no reason. So I don't know. I did see a report that, you know, speaking of wide receivers, that Gabe Davis is visiting the Saints. I wouldn't be surprised if the Steelers go after him, you know, just trying to get another vet in that receiver room. So like I said, I can't hate this move at all for the Steelers, even if they did overpay a lot for Aaron Rodgers. You know, obviously he's I would think he's probably got one or two more years left and then he's done. To be honest with you, I really thought he was gonna retire this year. But you know, the diva himself wants all the media attention, so I don't know why it took this long. It was the most obvious move of all time. I don't know why it took months. So yeah, I can't hate this move. I'm curious to see now what this does for the Falcons, if they're still trying to move Kirk Cousins, or if they're just gonna, you know, just bite the bullet and just keep him on the team this year, which, in my opinion, they shouldn't, but that's a different topic for another day.
I think the bullet's
day,
already
so.
Been bit, brother.
Yeah, I'm pretty
Where
sure
else
it
is
got
he gonna
bit.
go?
I've heard reports of the Vikings, and I laugh every time whenever someone brings up the Vikings, like, no way. They pretty much already bit the bullet when they paid him the $10 million roster bonus, so I don't know.
Yeah,
we'll
the
see.
Only other thing I can think of is quarterback needy team would be the Saints. And if that happens, you know for a fact he will go for 550 and 5 touchdowns on our secondary. At
that
least
bum ass receiving core? That terrible receiving core? Nah.
He'll do it himself. He'll run for 250 yards. That's just how we operate as an organization. If something bad can happen to us, you can pretty much chalk it down to it's going to happen. Last thing on some Aaron Rodgers, though, I think he's going to be pretty good. I don't know. I was a Rodgers fan before the whole, like, holdout and diva and ayahuasca thing. It's kind of washing away now, I'm not going to lie to you. But, I mean, he finished the last six games last year with a 19-5 touchdown to interception ratio, and he honestly looked like old Aaron Rodgers. So, I mean, if they can get that for at least half of the season, you have to think they're going to be good. I mean, their defense is going to be good. They're always good. Chris Boswell, put the team on my back kind of guy. He's the best kicker in the league now.
Falcons owner, he beat the Falcons. The Steelers beat the Falcons on only field goals in week one, and I hated every minute of it.
Yeah, that was one of the most disgusting games I've ever watched. But then we played the Raiders in that. Disgusting!
Oh my god! I don't want to relive that anymore.
Kirk Cousins and Jason Ritter could have having a left-handed arm throw off. I mean, it was so bad, dude.
Oh, dude.
Yeah, I think Gabe Davis to the Steelers could definitely happen. I mean, if I was Gabe Davis, I'd much rather sign with them than the Saints.
Yeah. No offense, but no offense to people who listen. From New Orleans, but nobody wants to move there.
No.
Swamp.
No. It's disgusting. That's a terrible place as with terrible quarterback play. At least
it is 100% the worst quarterback room in the league.
Yeah.
Rattler, and then I don't even know who their third string quarterback is.
Jake Haner.
Jake Haner. And then Tyler Shuck.
Yeah.
God, awful.
Yeah.
I can't wait.
I wouldn't
I
be
can't
surprised
wait to
if,
watch
they, if they roll Rattler out there for the first couple of games.
I think, I don't know if the report I saw was true, but I'm pretty sure that Shuck was going to be the week one starter.
Yeah, that would be interesting to follow up for sure.
Good luck to any of our Saints fans.
Do we play them
that
early?
Huh?
Do we play them early on in the year?
I'm not sure. I know the only two opponents that we play like within the first 5 weeks is Tampa and Carolina. So I think it's either like mid season to end of the season. I know one of the games we play the Saints is the very last game of the season. Yeah. I'm pretty sure we play them on the road in like the middle of the season.
Okay. Yeah, it would have been nice to get him within the first 3 or 4 weeks. Just have him even more rattled than they already would be. But I think that's all we got now for the football. But Georgia baseball had a huge weekend in the transfer portal. Currently have the number one transfer portal class, according to On3. We have eight new players, all within the top 250 in the transfer portal. So as of this morning, we got ECU starting right-handed pitcher Brad Pruitt. Supposed to be pretty good. The first transfer portal addition we got was our own version of Shohei Ohtani. We got a Japanese player from Seattle, Kenny Ishikawa. He had like a 4-something ERA and then batted like 360 or something like that. So they say he
Nuts.
wants to play both ways. So, I mean, that would be awesome to have a cool little two-way player. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think I read a report that I'm pretty sure that Georgia was one of the few schools that basically said that they would allow him to play two ways. So I think that played a huge factor in him coming to UGA. I'm kind of getting a little ahead of myself, but shout out Wes Johnson because he is getting a lot of pitchers. He's getting a lot of pitchers and a lot of dudes with low strikeout rates that we'll talk about here in a second. But dude, we need to get some damn lefties in the rotation and in the bullpen because I swear every single pitcher we've gotten is a right-handed pitcher.
I'm pretty sure every player that we have on this list was a right-hander, either batter or pitcher. So we'll go back to back. Back to back years. Next one we have is UNLV outfielder Cole Konarski, and he had a super low strikeout rate. Throughout the whole year, I believe he only had 22 strikeouts. And playing the whole year is wildly impressive. And we got a couple more pitchers here. Stanford righty Matt Scott, USC righty Caden Aoki. I feel like he's supposed to be the best out of them. He had a three,
Yes.
yeah, he had a 380 something ERA last year. A lot of strikeouts.
I think besides Ishikawa, I think Aoki is definitely the best portal addition that we've gotten so far. Just looking at all the reports and the rankings of Aoki, so that's another one I'm really excited about. Obviously, with Ishikawa being a two-way player, I'm really excited, but I will say Cole Konarski, that's the dude who I'm really excited to look for just 'cause he doesn't strike out a lot, which we hammered it when we came on the show and talked about the regional, which I don't want to relive again, but we definitely need some guys that strike out at a very low rate. So I'm really excited about that portal addition along with Ishikawa
Yeah.
and Caden Aoki.
I mean, we just had the most boom or bust offense of all time last year. Literally, it was either boom, ball goes far, very far, or bust, strikeout. It was pretty much no in between. We had a couple players here get on base,
Braves.
but that's it. Yeah, talk about boom or bust. That's just bust or bust. It's just bad. Another one, we got Michigan righty Dylan Vigay. Don't know if I pronounced that right. Don't really care. New Mexico first baseman Jody Orake. Definitely didn't pronounce that one correctly. That one's tough. And then New Orleans right-handed pitcher Grant Edwards. I think I nailed that one though.
Yeah, you got
Grant Edwards.
it.
Got that. I know this Jody Orate guy, he hit a lot of home runs last year. I believe he had 16 playing at New Mexico, which is it's quite a big amount. And Cole Konarski too, he still had 7 or 8 last year with only 22 strikeouts, which is really nice. I like all of these additions. I mean, I'm not going to come on here and say I know a lot about them or that I just absolutely hate them and I think they're terrible. I know that Dylan Vigay guy, he had like a 6 point something ERA, which is obviously nothing to write home about. But who knows, maybe a little change of scenery could help. Comes from a big name school, big name program, Michigan. Who knows? I'm sure he throws gas and I would be scared shitless in the batter's box. So I'm not going to say anything else about that.
Yeah, I'm gonna piggyback off you, Jacob. I'm not gonna sit up here and pretend that I've dissected each one of these guys' game. But I will give special props to Wes Johnson. Obviously he's attacking more pitching, which God, this team needs more pitching. So I can't fault him for that, even if if some of these dudes who that we got have like a 7 ERA. Like I said, Jacob, I think it's more of these guys need to change the scenery, and I'm not gonna say, you know, oh, like I'm worried about Wes Johnson developing these guys. And dude's been a pitching coach for forever, so I really don't have I have all the faith in the world in him on developing these guys. So I do think that we obviously, you know, the elephant is in the room is that we need to add more lefties, which I'm gonna assume that they are. They're not gonna just be like, all right, well, we're only gonna attack right-handed guys, so we're not gonna get any lefties.
Just
But you
put a
know, I
filter on the
think,
transfer portal, just do lefties only.
yeah. You know, I think it's been such a great start, you know, to the transfer portal. You know, like you said, Jacob, number one transfer portal class, and on according to on three, I think
Yeah.
is what you said. Yeah. So I think this is only the beginning. So I'm expecting Georgia to start getting some more dudes up in here, and but yeah, solid start.
Yeah, not only do we have the most commitments, but we have like the highest rated class too, because they're all top 250 guys. But yeah, most guys committed. A lot of guys leave, to be fair. And I think the kind of the X factor to this upcoming season would be if some of those guys that we have that are entering the MLB draft maybe don't get drafted or opt to come back to college. So I wonder if we'll wait on that. The MLB draft, I know we just talked about it. It's not too far away. It's during the All-Star break, which is mid-July, I believe. So, I know the portal's still going to be open. It's the off-season. I think it's definitely going to be interesting. And then all these players who go to Omaha or that are in super regionals, they're not going to enter the transfer portal, even if they want to, until their season's over. So, hopefully we get to pick from a better. From a better cream of the crop, I guess. Pick from some of the top teams, maybe some disgruntled players who don't want to continue playing for teams like Tennessee, who suck and just get railed by Arkansas in an elimination game.
Yeah, Liam Doyle, hold that L, buddy. I really hope that you join Uber Eats after, because that's all you're going to be. Really, rookie A ball at best is where you're going to be at. You know, all that shit talk, and you get absolutely dominated by Arkansas, which was such a just a great hate watch. I was watching this series, you know, yesterday, and then I think it was Friday.
Yeah.
Friday, yeah. So, amazing. I will hate watch Tennessee in every sport that I can. Hope they get absolutely dominated, which, you know, personally from the Gridiron Post family, shout out Arkansas.
Shout out Arkansas.
You guys, you know, saved the entire country from those stupid ass Tony Vitello Twitter memes that I don't have to see anymore.
Yeah.
And you know that insufferable fan base can now go crawl back into their trailers after pretending to like baseball, you know, because they first discovered that baseball was a sport 4 years ago. And so, you know, they'll all crawl out of their trailers once, you know, once football starts and they start praising whatever mid-ass quarterback's going to start for them this year. So, shout out Arkansas. You guys are amazing. I think you guys in Coastal Carolina, I think you guys are the two teams I think are going to make a serious run in Omaha. So, shout out.
Yeah, I'd like to see that. Never had a problem with Arkansas. They're never really relevant enough in any other sport to have a problem with them, except for that
And
one
basketball
time
this year.
that they beat us in basketball. That game was terrible. Yeah, that game was atrocious. But I said that because we like Sam Pittman, obviously. Pit boss fighting for his job. Get it done this year, brother. Get it done this year.
Get her done.
Boss. Yep. Yeah, so 11-4 was the final score. Just kind of blew him out of the water. I think they hung, what'd they hang, like six up on him? And yeah, that fourth inning they hung five. That's pretty much all it takes in baseball. I mean, that's a lot of runs. Another good hate watch was watching Florida State get destroyed by Oregon State. That was kind of funny too. I don't like Florida State particularly at all. And yeah, Oregon State's going to be a fun team to watch going forward. We also have LSU advancing, UCLA advancing, Louisville advancing, and then Murray State beat up on Duke, and they're playing again tonight. That'll be, is that the only game three? Everything else is a sweep?
Yes.
Ooh, a couple of the game threes were yesterday.
I want to mention another hate watch. Shout out Coastal Carolina because you guys absolutely dominated Auburn, and it was really funny to
Yeah,
watch.
they swept Auburn. That was cool.
Especially that dude on Twitter who got apps who got clowned on by the Barstool page. I don't know if you saw that. That was hilarious. So,
Yeah, it was really good.
shout out Coastal Carolina. You guys have a badass football stadium, and
Yeah.
shout out.
The teal turf, whatever color that is, the aquamarine turf.
It's like a teal slash aqua, I
Yeah.
think.
They're definitely a potential rebuild destination for College Football 26.
I was about to mention something. I was like, I'm kind of like deciding on who I want to rebuild
Yeah.
when I first get the game, and Coastal Carolina is on my top five, along with Virginia Tech, just solely because Enter Sandman is in the game this year.
Yeah, that'd be pretty cool. And I did Eastern Carolina last year, so Coastal would be a nice little
Ooh,
counterpart to that.
it's a
ECU is
good
a good
one.
one. They have great playbooks, just by the way.
They have great
They have great
uniforms too.
uniforms too. Yeah, the yellow and purple is it's pretty sick. I liked it. And
Yeah.
they have a black alternate too that was just nasty. I loved it. Cool. You want to lead this one
Yeah.
off? Because I don't. Did you watch any of the games this weekend? Like any pitch?
Yes, I
Okay,
force
so
myself.
you do that. I didn't watch a single pitch.
I love pain. So, the Braves get swept in San Francisco this weekend. They lose off of a wild pitch. They lose off of a walk-off homer. And then yesterday they lost just because they couldn't score enough runs. Just I can't like I'm at like a loss of words because we pretty much like said every like adjective to describe this team. It's just been just brutal. I really don't know how you salvage the season. I mean, sure, if the Braves want to fire Snit, which I'll just say it, I don't think firing Snit is gonna save the season. I mean, it's more in the players than the coaching staff is what I'll say. Sure, does Snit need to get more involved in the games? Yes. He got ejected. I think it was Saturday's game for the first time in I think like a damn millennium, because I've never seen him had the last time I've seen him show emotion is when Jose Ureña beamed Acuña when he was a rookie. And was basically wanting to fight the Marlins, which was hilarious. We need that snip back, man. Like
Yeah.
this one is just brutal, man. Like he just shows no emotion, will hardly ever argue balls and strikes, which any competent manager that's involved in the game will stand up for his guys. But it's really just it's on the players, just simple and easy. I mean. Air had had a few errors this series that really cost them. And then bullpen has been atrocious. They've blown so many games this year. They blew 3 straight games this weekend. With the walk-off wild pitch from Pierce Johnson, and then he gave up the homer on Saturday, and then. The bullpen gave up some unnecessary runs yesterday, which led the Braves to lose. I will say another thing. Obviously, this is not going to be a cop out, but some of these umps, man. I'm so ready for the ABS to come next year. Which, by the way, it was confirmed that the ABS is coming next year. I'm so glad because I don't because some of these strike calls really just impact the game. Like yesterday, there were so many, just embarrassing strike calls on balls that are really like this far off the plate. I don't get it, man. I really don't know how the Braves, salvage the season. I wouldn't be surprised in the slightest if they're sellers at the deadline, which if I were to guess, I think Ozuna is gonna get traded. If the Braves definitely are sellers. I think he's won for his last like 20-something.
Yeah, I saw one for the last 24.
Battling that hip injury. So, we play Milwaukee in the weekday series. I really don't know how this series is going to go. It's the Brewers have been pretty underwhelming this year. Not as underwhelming as the Braves,
You got a
but
winning
I
record.
do. Yeah. But however, I will say something that really just irked me this series, which, in case you lived under a rock, Craig Kimbrel, he came in for one inning. I think it was on Friday. Yeah, it was on Friday. He came in through a scoreless inning. He either struck out one or two players. I think it was just one to end the inning. And then he gets canned the next day. Now, is Craig Kimbrel washed? Yes, he's not good anymore. His average velo on his fastball is like 92, 91. The thing that really just pisses me off is if you're gonna bring him up and then immediately DFA him, why in the hell would you waste him in the minors for a month? Bring him up, he throws one inning, and then you're like, oh, okay, like you're getting DFA'd. Like that literally just makes no sense to me. Why would you let him rot in the minors for a month just to get called up, throw one half inning, and then get DFA'd? Like I don't know if it was just a thing where he just wanted to pitch for the Braves one last time before calling it a career, which also just doesn't make any sense, because why the hell would you do it in San Francisco and not
Do it at
in
home.
Atlanta? Yeah, I the front office really has just pissed me off for the past few weeks. I really just don't think they know what the hell they're doing. They signed Jose Ruiz off the Phillies off of waivers. If you don't know who that is, long story short, he has like a 9 ERA, which, yay, like less financial guy, yay, diamond in the rough. The day that Liberty Media sells off the Braves will be the biggest day in this franchise's history after the World Series. I'm not one of those people who is going to blame AA all that much. Is I really blame, Braves shareholders company that owns the Braves, Liberty Media, because they're just cheap. And I really just think that AA is really handcuffed. Sure, has he made some questionable moves like trading away William Contreras for Sean Murphy? Yes. Of course I'm gonna criticize him, but I don't think it's all his fault. I really just think that he's at a victim of, just a cheap ass ownership that owns the Braves and won't spend, but yet they'll build, apartment complexes around the Battery and shit, just dumbass stuff like that, and won't pay for the team. So I think AA is just severely handcuffed by, these cheap ass companies that own the Braves. So I don't really put all the fault on him. I put all the fault in the players. I put all the fault at the hitting coach. Which, by the way, Kevin Seitzer is currently on the Mariners, and he's having Cal Raleigh look like a damn MVP if Aaron Judge didn't exist. So, like I said, we've been beating a dead horse about the Braves. I really don't know how much how much we can talk about them without just having to rehash the same old stuff every single time we come on here. Oh, offense can't hit with runners in scoring position. The bullpen stinks. Players show no heart. This player's struggling. That player's struggling. It's just like at some point, I just can't. Like, I don't know. It's severely just frustrating. This team is one of the more semi-normal teams in Atlanta. Who actually care about winning, unlike the Hawks, which Tony Wrestler. And the wrestlers should not be the owners, but that's another topic for another day. But I really, to be honest with you, Jacob, I really don't know if one person for the Braves is going to be at the All-Star game, which is,
At our
of course,
home
if
field.
Yeah, it's at Truist. I seriously don't know if there's one dude that'll be from the Braves that will be there. If
I think it
I
should
if
be
I
Acuña out of.
it should be Acuña, but he just hasn't played like the same amount of games.
And either one of, if not both, or maybe neither, Sale or Schwellenbach.
Yeah, I would say,
I think Sale just out of name value. I mean, he's been awesome.
If you were to ask me, I would say, either or, well, definitely Chris Sale, and then sure, if you want to throw Drake Baldwin in there, sure.
I know, I heard
Sean
his
Bott
name's not
too.
even on the ballot. So you have to write in Drake Baldwin now.
All right, so if that's the case, then it'll just be Sale. But Jacob, I really don't know how much I can talk about the Braves anymore without having to rehash the same shit every week. 'Cause the Braves do the same thing every single day and still somehow find new ways to lose. So very just extremely frustrating. The Braves could fire all the coaches they want and they still won't be able to salvage the season. It's on the players. They need I again, Jacob, I really don't know how you salvage the season, to be
Yeah.
honest with you. I really don't.
10 games under 500 at this point on June 9th, 2025. 27-37. We got Chris Sale on the mound tonight versus Aaron Civale. And then Grant Holmes tomorrow. And Wednesday, Schwellenbach. And
Yeah, I mean, starting pitching hasn't been an issue of this team.
no, not at all. They've all been good.
Nope.
Especially lately,
Yeah.
Chris Sale, 2.93 ERA.
Dominant.
Worked that down. It was
Dominant.
at like 6 ERA or something earlier in the year. Worked it all the way down to 2.93. I think his last several games, at least like 4 or 5 games, have been like one run. He's given up one run, maybe two at the most. But he's been dominant. He looks like his old self, literally only needs 2 pitches. He has 2 A-plus pitches. I just think that's the most wild thing in the world.
And that fastball and that slider, man, when those are clicking, it is the two deadliest pitches any pitcher can throw, especially Chris Sale with that funky delivery.
Yep, you got that three-quarter sidearm looking delivery. I like what I'm seeing from Schwellenbach lately as well. I know he reached up to 101 velo on his fastball. Just please don't get hurt. That's all I'm gonna say. Just please don't get hurt. But yeah, that's all I have on the Braves. I didn't watch any of the series this weekend, thank God. The games didn't even
I don't
start
blame
until
you.
10:30. I mean, am I gonna watch
right.
tonight? Yeah, probably because there's nothing else on. But unless you want to watch the WNBA.
No thanks. I'll gladly pass. But I don't know. Maybe this team will force me to watch, Angel Reese brick layups. So another thing I want to add before we move on. Someone in his damn locker room needs to step up and be a leader.
Yeah.
There's you can tell there's obviously a severe lack of leadership. I think that leadership role died when Dansby left, and before that it was Freddie. Really the guy who I think should be the leader of the clubhouse is Matt Olson, because
Austin Riley.
Austin Riley or Matt Olson, one of the two. It may not show it on the field, but I know those guys care. I know those guys hate losing.
Yeah.
But they got to get better. The whole team has to be better, unless your name is not Ronald Acuña Jr., which you are the most exciting thing about the Braves right now.
Or Drake
And
Baldwin.
Drake Ba yeah, Drake Baldwin.
Yes. Still very
I want to
young,
be called.
very volatile. I mean, Acuña's done this as ever since he's been healthy. He's been a top three player in baseball, and he's not three or two. It's pretty simple. He's a five-tool player. He's got a frozen rope for an arm. I mean, he's the fastest guy on the field at all times, and he hits nukes, singles, doubles, and walks, and triples because he's one of the fastest guys on the field. He's probably one of the only guys who can hit a triple. But that's really like, we watch the games for you, Acuna. I hope you know that. And I like watching Chris Sale pitch too, so I'm probably going to watch that. Now that I say that, he's probably going to get shelled, give up 6 through 3 innings or something like that. But like we said, starting pitching has not been the issue all year. I mean, it was not super fun towards the beginning of the year, but I mean, they've tightened it down pretty well. That's all I got.
Yeah, I think I've pretty much said all I wanted to say.
Yeah. We'll close the topics here with talking about the NBA Finals. We had game two last night. Al Shada defeats the Haliban by like 30.
if you guys don't understand that reference, it's a huge Twitter meme, NBA Twitter meme. So no, it's messed up, but it's a pretty funny joke.
The Haliban got him in the first game, though. I know we haven't talked about it. Let's talk about last night first. Just a severely mid performance by everyone on the Pacers. Everyone had 15, 14, 16, 17, 11, 14, 11. Those were all their points numbers. Tyrese Haliburton had 17, 3 rebounds, and 6 assists. That's not a superstar player by any means.
Not good enough.
Even his line in the first game was wild, but he hit the shot. I mean,
what the hell?
Yeah. Miles Turner had a pretty good game. 16, 4, and 4. Still need more out of him. Siakam had 15, 7, and 4. Nesmith hit 4 threes, which is a lot to only have 14 points. I mean, just an overall mid performance. And then Al Shada, 34, 5, and 8. And their big three of Williams, Holmgren, and Shea had 34, 15, and 19. So, and they got 20 points from Caruso off the bench and 4 threes. That's big.
Yeah. To be honest with you, Jacob, I did not watch a single minute of this game because I kind of figured, I mean, obviously Indiana stole game one, easily could be down 0-2 right now, but I thought that OKC was going to blow them out, and turns out I was right. So I didn't really pay too much attention to this game.
123-107 final score.
Yeah, honestly, closer than I thought it was going to be. I thought it was going to be like a 25 point just blowout. Yeah. But SGA
most of the time.
Yeah. SGA had a MVP level performance, 34, 8 assists, and then defensive rebounds or rebounds had 5, plus 5 in the plus minus. Chet Holmgren came back from a really bad game one and scored double digits. I think game one he had like 6 points or something. Jalen Williams, 19. And like I said, Jacob, 20 off the bench from Caruso, and then 18 off the bench for Aaron Wiggins. So, really good. I hope game three is good, which I think game three is Wednesday, I think. Yeah, I don't know. But dominant by OKC. I really don't have too much to say on this game.
It is on Wednesday.
All right, let's go back to Tyrese Haliburton.
Game one.
Tyrese Haliburton needs to be better.
Yeah. I mean, like I was saying, he didn't have a crazy stat line in game one either, but he hit that shot. He had 14, 10 rebounds, and 6 assists, but he had the game-winning shot with 0.3 seconds left. The Pacers were leading for 0.3 seconds of this game. The Thunder were leading for more than 47 minutes of a 48-minute game, and they lost. Pacers were down by, I think, like 13 or 14. They were down by 13 going into the fourth quarter. And, the Haliban just dropped a bomb on him, dude. It was crazy. I was watching that game. I was like, oh, my God. As soon as he got the ball, I was like, I mean, he has to hit it, right? Like, that's his new thing. He's like, I'll play like crap the entire game. Then I'll just hit an absolute nuclear missile on Shea's head in the first game. Like, Shea's been given MVP level performances for all games. I mean, he had 38, 5, and 3 in game one. As opposed to the Pacers just have everyone score more than 15 points and they'll win. Pascal Siakam was their highest scoring player. He had a great game too. Not necessarily super great on the stat book, but I remember looking up and just seeing Siakam every play. He was getting every loose ball, just running the floor like crazy. He had 19 points, 10 rebounds, 3 assists. It's pretty good. Obi Toppin hit 5 threes. That was huge for them down the stretch. He was clutch too in that comeback. Nesmith, he's a sharpshooter. He had 10 points, 12 rebounds, which is weird, and then hit 3 threes. That game one was awesome. I hope game two is somewhat like that too. I just want it to be a close series. I know my prediction was OKC in 5 and yours was Pacers in 6, both of which are still very much alive here.
Me and Jacob were texting back and forth during game one, and I was so excited to have a prediction right for once on this show. I think maybe I've gotten one right, but I was so happy, man. That's crazy. Tyrese Haliburton has been on the craziest, like, clutch performance in any playoffs I've ever seen. Bro definitely has that Mahomes dark magic.
Yeah.
I've never seen someone who just repeatedly shows up in clutch moments and hits clutch shots and makes them. I mean, obviously, we weren't alive for the Jordan era, so we haven't seen anything like that. I mean,
yeah.
No, I mean,
he's again, 6 for 6 with a chance to tie or take the lead with less than 5 seconds left in this playoff run alone.
Dude, that is the craziest stat, man.
And he had a bunch of them in the regular season too. It's not like he just like flipped a switch and turned it on. He was doing it for the whole year. But he's like one of those weird guys. Like he has before, but he's not the type of guy to go out and give you 38 on a normal night like Shea is.
Yeah, it's funny, Jacob. You call him a clutch merchant, which I truly believe after seeing the box score from game two. But I mean, that's not an insult. It's just funny because I mean, besides last night, it definitely feels like the Pacers, whenever they're down by double digits in the fourth quarter, it's definitely must-see TV.
It's like, all right, guys, you can start trying again.
Yeah, ignore the first three quarters now. It's time to try.
Yeah. It's weird.
Yeah. Hopefully Indiana wins game 3. So, should be interesting. But yeah. Hopefully it's a good series, so...
Yeah, I would like to see it go to 7 games just for a viewership perspective, because, I mean, the longer it is, that means when it ends, football season's that much closer. But, yeah, I do still think it'll be a gentleman's sweep. I think last night proved that OKC definitely has it in him to beat the crap out of Indiana, but Indiana might not necessarily have it in him to beat the crap out of OKC. I just think they're too good. I don't like them by any means, and I pull for the Sixers while I'm watching them. Or not the Sixers, the Pacers, while I'm watching them every time. But
Pacers in 6.
I just don't think it's going to happen. We'll have a U.S. Open preview coming on Thursday as well. Oakmont Country Club. That'll be awesome. Heard the rough is like you can lay down in it and nobody can see you. It's Ben bad. Griffin said he would sign for +4 right now and he would like his chances to win. I was like, good lord, man. That's wild.
It's bad.
Yeah. That's a little preview on for Thursday's episode, but that's going to be it for us from today. We appreciate you guys. Make sure you watch, comment, like, subscribe, all that good stuff, and we'll be back on Thursday. See ya.
Peace.